Welcome to the Compassionate Capitalist Radio Show with host Karen Ranz. A compassionate capitalist is someone who invests their money into entrepreneur endeavors to bring innovation to the market, impact their community, create jobs, and generate wealth for all those involved. Karen and her guests share insights and best practices for entrepreneurs to succeed and scale their business and investors to share in that success without all the risks. And now.
You're good.
Okay.
Welcome. Welcome back to the Compassionate Capitalist podcast and radio show. I'm excited to revisit the topic of branding today. This is something that I think is so critical, and sometimes it's really hard for entrepreneurs and investors to get their heads around. So we're going to talk about branding as a key to raising capital and creating, you know, a better environment for acquisition opportunities. But we're also going to start with the basics. So we're all on the same page. What is a brand? What is it not? Why is it important to emotionally engage with your customers and the would-be investors? How does the brand help or affect the concept of scaling the company to reflect that corporate culture and the mission? And hint, it isn't the logo that creates value and trust from your potential customers. And because of my special guest, we're going to have an opportunity to look at how this is nuanced specifically to the Hispanic marketplace. For Hispanic and Latina founders and those companies seeking to attract diverse customer base that includes Hispanics, all of this really matters. And whether you are a founder or an investor listening in, understanding any nuances to being successful in a marketplace to Hispanic market is really important because guess what? The Hispanic and Latino population, which includes, you know, people of many different races as far as like countries of origins, there is 62.1 million Hispanics, according to the U.S. Census as of 2020. And that is a population growth of 23%, while the population of non-Hispanics grew only 4.3% since 2010. And even more amazing is that according to the SBA, the number of Hispanic business owners has grown 34% in the last 10 years. In fact, there's an estimated 4.65 million Hispanic-owned businesses in the U.S., making them the fastest growing segment of U.S. small businesses. This is an area that I think every business needs to pay attention to be successful, whether they specifically have a product targeted toward that, or they just want to be all inclusive in the way that they attract their customers and retain their customers. So let me tell you why. My guest today, Gabriela Pulido, is the CEO and founder of Scalto, a creative consultancy. And it's interesting how she came up with that name, but I'm not going to steal her thunder on telling you about that. Gabriela is an experienced strategic marketing executive with more than 30 years of building successful brands. She advises companies on transformative processes, portfolio management, branding and communications, and has been supporting more than 100 brands in this endeavor, such as Emerant, Endeavor, Insignio, Life Invest, Mercantile, and Nestle, and even the Miami Symphony Orchestra. These and other clients are listed on the company website. I encourage you to go there at scalto.com, which is S-C-A-L-T-O.com. Gabriela is a serial entrepreneur, mentor, advisor, mother of four, and a passionate believer in the power of the right mindset and a strong purpose to generate value while doing good, which is what we are all part of our compassionate capitalist community here as well. Gabriela graduated in industrial engineering from Columbia University in New York, and recently she pivoted towards solving creative scalability challenges specific to branding and communications and created Scalto. Gabriela returned to the U.S. in 2017 and now lives in Miami, operating her international business. Scalto helps Hispanics and Latin American B2B service businesses design truly scalable business models to grow over time. And that starts with their proprietary ScaleX program. So welcome to the Compassionate Capitalist Show, Gabriela.
Well, thank you so much, Karen. A lot of information pulled in. Super looking forward to today for the interview and for sharing some thoughts. Yes, Hispanics is huge, but also getting to the right mindset makes a hell of a difference. So the idea of coming forward and doing and creating solutions together, I'm excited about today.
Yes, great. So let's get started with your story and your passion and what brought you back to America to settle and start this company.
So I've like you said, I was basically more into management consulting, and then I became into branding. And by accident or by design, whatever you can take, the company that I was working for left the country. I was in my hometown in Venezuela. So I started off with clients. I hit the ground running with clients in my previous agency, its branding agency. And I came to a point where we developed many, many brands since 2004, in service-based and airlines and whatnot. And it came to a point where the country where I was living, many people would know what was happening there. So I started off saying, okay, what it is that I can do in terms of opportunities or in terms of security, in terms of my family also. And so we decided to migrate to Miami. That was almost 5 years ago. So when I started and came here to Florida, it was more as to how I could help companies scale or help companies figure out what their brand and what their communications were doing in terms of growing. And I pivoted that company that I created. It was a story that it was pre-COVID. I sold my stake in my previous company and created Scalto right on COVID. In March 31st. So why did I create that? Just because I understood that there was a lever that people were not, they're subutilizing in terms of brand and communications that could be well taken, if well taken into account or well used, could help you scale. And so I came to Miami, picture this 5 years ago, the Miami tech scene was happening. Everything was starting to happen. It was, I can tell you now it's real, but at that moment in time, it was just, things were, crypto was starting to hit it off. So it was very exciting to see how we can help mid-sized companies with this mindset in place. And that's where I started Scalto. And you were saying, why Scalto? Just because coming from Latin, if you scale alto, it's Scalto. It's just like, we really wanted to help companies pull that, bear in mind with the marketing and communications perspective. In our mind, what's not communicated, it's not known. So the idea of communicating the right message, the right concept, and the right with the right experience, we're going to talk later about the ScaleX program, but that's in essence, it drove me into helping companies do that.
Okay, great. So let's start with just the basics. So make sure all of our listeners are on the same page. What is a brand and what is it not?
So a brand, it's not a logo. It's not the little design that somebody made and it's like, why did you draw this and do some type of design or some type of picture? For me, it's a brand. It's much more than the logo. It's something that's in mind of your consumer, of your customer. And that, if you leave an open book, anybody can create their own story. So you better create your own story and your own ideas in order to position yourself the way you want to position in the market.
Yeah.
And that is how you make people feel, how you make them understand you, how do you interact with them? And that is part of what we develop. So it's broader than just a logo or a name or a color or a shape or form. It's more as to how you make them feel.
Right. So, because I think that's when you see a logo, if you don't already have that connection with the company to have that feeling, the logo is just a logo, right? The logo is a trigger to a memory and an emotion of what that company should be representing in that customer's mind.
Exactly. And if you leave it to black, somebody would put their own ideas. So you or a competitor, how do you differentiate with your competition? So that is something that you actually work well into developing all the aspects of the interaction, not only what you're saying, what your representatives are telling you over the phone, or how is your website? Is your website clunky? Or is your website somewhere not representing what you want to believe, what you truly believe in?
Yeah.
And that is one of the things that has been in vogue at this point. It's like they call it the purpose-driven companies and companies that have a purpose in mind. And that is great. That's how do you connect and how do you attract like 7 millennials to work with you? But you need to be true to that. If you're going to be striving for or looking for this purpose, you have to walk your talk, and yeah. It has to be 360 in all the touch points and experience points with your customer.
Yeah. And then we'll talk a little bit more about it on the investor side, but I just to kind of bring that into the loop here, I think it's once you start understanding and you own your story and you own the role or the impact you're going to have in the marketplace, that's the story that the investor wants to hear so that they know, you know, then you kind of have to understand as a company, I think, as a living entity, as a business, you have to understand your role, your purpose, where you're going to go with it. So that whole customer connection, because once you've identified that, then you have something that an investor can identify to almost the same way a customer is. It's the overall approach from an investor, whereas, you know, a customer is like specific to, you know, the product as much. Investors don't care as much about what the product is. It's does your market want your product, and does your market want to stay connected with you?
Absolutely. That product market fit, that's like the number one thing that they look into. But you're Karen, you're right. I mean, and the journey that you were talking, early stage startups or entrepreneurs that want to raise capital or even start a business, they would say, I have this idea, I have this. You first have to figure out whether it's a product market fit. And then you start saying, okay, what is it? What's the reason? What's the essence? What's your why? And going forward, that makes you're ahead, many steps ahead. If you have your why and have your message, like sift through what your essence is, in order to go straight to an investor and say, this is what I'm doing, this is why I'm doing it, and this is how the experience is going to go and play out.
Yeah.
And it gives you a head start. It gives you a, investors like that. And I've been advising early stage startups, they would start like, Gabby, I have this back of the envelope idea solution and whatnot. I was like, okay, let's figure out what is your essence. And so once they do that, you can see how their multiples of raised capital that goes higher, goes up, just because they have clarity in that message, that elevator pitch that we're saying, it comes easier when you have that structure established.
Yeah. So you mentioned about startups, you know, and we oftentimes think about, you know, startups figuring all that stuff out. So it's hard. The corporate culture is just get the job done. You know what I mean? It's hard for them to fathom the importance of corporate culture and branding and the story when they're just starting up and, you know, identifying their market fit and things like that. But even so, when you talk about scaling, the focus is often on your operational side, you know, getting greater efficiency, developing the systems for customer retention, you know, based on customer relations a lot of times. So tell our listeners about how brand scales, like how does it go from that early stage when there's not a lot necessarily to work where they're just trying to make money. And then you get to a point where you're trying to scale so that you can potentially exit, you know, and get into, you know, a normal positive, like strong cash flow positive. Talk about how your company works with customers or your customers like that within that corporate culture mission at those different stages, maybe describing how ScaleX works to address that.
Yeah. And many, many ideas come about when with your last question. It's just like, what does it take for a company, a mid-sized company already in operations, wanting to go from six figures to seven figures, from 17, wanted to scale, wanted to grow. What does it take? And when you figure out that they're sitting in this amazing potential, which is your brand, which is sub-utilized, and you start saying, okay, what is your scaling mindset? That's in our program, we go first. It's like, how's your scalability index? And we can do that. And we have like one-on-one sessions before clients. So start seeing where there's a fit between the client and Scalto. And we have that. It's like, okay, where in this realm of things that we have, what it is that you can pull and push in terms of scaling. So the first essence goes, the first space we go to is the scaling mindset. We understand what's your customer proposition, what is your essence to being there, to of existence, and what are your growth options. So that's the scaling mindset for us. It defines like what is the what is your vision? How does this, how can it be magnified? And we start with your why. Most likely, you know, the Simon Sinek approach with the golden circle. That would be, in essence, the type of experiences that we go through. It's like, let's sift through that and going for what are your growth options. Once we know where you're heading, and that's the first pillar, the second pillar goes, okay, how's your narrative? So you know where you're heading, but maybe your narrative, your brand, your messaging, your everything that you have encompassing your communications is off. It might be off in terms of design. So we might evolve your brand or transform your brand, but it might be off in terms of messaging or in terms of influencers that you're using or in terms of impact ambassadors, whatever it is that is happening in that space. And we go about it defining what's your thought leadership and then what are your content pillars that you should go forward, the brand. And then we go, the next pillar would go, okay, now you know. First, you know, you have your mindset, then you have your narrative. And then third, you go with the experience. How's that customer journey? And what are the key touch points that you have with your customer or your client? And then where are the loopholes? Where are the pain points? Where are the friction points that we can address in order to have the experience so that it enables that growth options that we decided in the first place? And then we create the marketing plan. And from here, we have like this setup of what it is that you can do in terms of brand and communications. And then we activate it through a marketing engine experience. And that comes later. But that's like the first steps that we have is a very structured plan so that we have steps going. Some are going parallel, depending on the client. The client might have like a super, I'm going IPO or I'm doing this, or I want to hire this type of talent and we have to move forward. Or attacking different markets, coming from the West Coast to the East Coast, going to the Hispanics, whatever it is that comes about. So we go and develop this plan, Scalex plan for our clients.
Okay, so let's switch gears a bit and then talk about just what you were talking about and how is it different for the Hispanic companies reaching a broader audience versus marketing strictly to the Hispanic community, you know, what, you know, on both sides. So talk about it. What are the nuances that you've noticed that you're able to solve, you know, being Hispanic yourself and understanding the culture that maybe somebody like myself may not understand completely?
Yeah, there's a huge mistake or a huge blunder that people put all Hispanics into one bucket. It's like putting all English speaking people in one bucket. So
the Brits and us are so much alike.
But wait a minute, go for the East Coast and the West Coast, go from New York to Miami, whatever. Right. There are important differences, and not all Latinos, not all Hispanics want to put their money and their underneath their mattress. I mean, there are so many cultures, there's so many breeding, and I'm in Miami. They say Miami is the capital of Latin America, and you have from mostly all the Latin nations are here, Latin American nations are here. But every you need to go for the niche. So what is that you're so if you're going for lending, if you're going for I don't know, real estate, what it is, what's the need, what are you trying to solve for? And you need to talk to them. You need to understand what are the pain points, what keeps them up at night. And understanding what the essence of your ideal customer is important. So what are the key things it's not one group. It's many, many groups. And the other thing is that they're different cultures. So the Venezuelan might be, or Dominican might be super straightforward, whereas the Colombian would be different versus the Spaniards would be a bit more hard. Whatever you figure, you need to understand where they're coming from and what they're coming behind. If they're first generation, second generation within the United States, There are many different aspects, not only demographics, but in essence, what keeps them up at night. And that has come to me, even for myself, coming from Venezuela, coming here to the US, even marketing. I would do different, completely different techniques in marketing in Venezuela that I would do here. And even I have clients coming in from Colombia, from Brazil into the US. That's what we help bridge that gap also. So we're in our countries, they would talk to the president of a company. Here we go for the CTO or the CMO, or talk to their translations, that movie Lost in Translation. You need to translate that. And that bridge needs to be understood. What are the differences? And don't never assume.
Yeah, sure. So is there a specific sense of loyalty or preference a Hispanic consumer or business owner would have to a Hispanic brand? Or is there motivation? You know, you talk about their pain points. So is it like the generic consumer or customer might be where it's price, quality, availability?
It depends. I like a super great consultant, it would say it depends. But I've seen great loyalty to core brands. You can see Goya, which is an international but Hispanic, tending to Hispanics or ethnic group, like in the US and every, but you see companies coming in, flying in from Argentina or coming in from different, they would be loyal to that. You see soccer, we call it football, but soccer and that space, it's big. You see different sports and different aspects that connect. So you tend to look for connectors, tend to look for spaces that are commonalities, you can't say all of them are incredulous or they're all, no, it's just different. There's different stages that they're coming in. Some are coming in to invest, some are coming in to migrate, some are coming in to move in, whatever the situation. You need to understand, and we place special attention to understanding that ideal client profile and what is the jobs to be done.
Yeah. Well, so let's kind of flip that then. If it's not so much, you know, finding that product market fit, it seems to be the formula. It's kind of consistently regardless. You know, you're understanding the pain points and what problem or what, how are you going to connect with them? What is it something that companies should avoid, that they should, what is a paradigm that maybe non-Hispanic companies or even like on the investors, they have a paradigm that they need to shift because they don't do this, you know, what's the don't do thing?
I would say never.
Besides,
assume,
you mentioned earlier, you can't, you know, don't put them all in one bucket.
No.
But something else specific that find companies do and you're like, oh, no, we got to change that.
Never assume. So they would assume that Latin America companies, they don't innovate and they just copy what they're doing in the US. There's so much innovation coming out from Latin America. The growth entrepreneurial, the investors, the VCs coming into the money coming into the generating that part of the world is impressive just because they need to leapfrog. So if there's no electricity or there's no internet, they would leapfrog and say, go satellite as opposed to build a cable. No, go leapfrog. And we need to do something in order to adapt and actually compete in this marketplace. So that assumption that it's not coming, that whatever's coming in, it's not working, or it might be second or third world, not even. There are many, many solutions that are coming out there in terms of healthcare, in terms of telemedicine was way, way doing before, even before COVID, of course. But that is one. And the other things that I advise my clients to do is like get help. I mean, people have gone through this before. If you want to bridge that, get help so that you understand that things if you understand that things are done differently, that's like you have a winning point from the onset, and then get help in order to bridge that.
So is there anything specific? So like of a US business that you mentioned, you know, one of the things I've noticed about a lot of particularly Latin American companies, countries similar to what you just said, is that because they don't have the same legacy infrastructure that we have in the US, that innovation has just been, they could apply the innovation like almost immediately. So the idea of mobile payments, for example, had been adopted in Latin America, and using cellular as a primary means to access the internet has been, you know, they were really much further away. They're, when we still have lots of areas of the United States that do not have normal access to the internet here, or are, and a lot of people, you know, older folks just maybe starting to figure out how to do mobile payments, right? Where it's been, I think, part of the culture. That's been something I've experienced and what I've learned in working with clients. Is that one of those things besides just, you know, the money change, but are those some of the kind of things that they that businesses, US businesses going into Latin America or European markets need to understand and not make some assumptions?
Yeah, the basic idea is that we do a lot more with much less. So that fact, the resiliency, the adaptability, that's coming on the positive side. So expect to have that from the countries in Latin America. Say generally, yeah, I do think, well, you go more into the VCs and to angel investments and see what's going on. It's impressive. But the idea is to come in and the element of surprise, what can be done, what can be tried. So I have a team of 17 people in Venezuela, for instance, and the creative development that I have there is amazing. And so you have talent, you have people working with, Karen, they have very little to work with. And with that very little, they create amazing things. So expect the surprises to come in positively and give that permission. And when you come in from first world, coming into the third world, coming in, and you're expecting the things that you take for granted in the US, expecting everything to work, you also need to be expect also surprises on the negative side, that things are not going to be working and things that you took for granted are not going to be working likewise. So it's more, even when I came here from Venezuela here, I needed to understand that what things were different. How do you adapt? How do you perceive? So I spent like a year interviewing like 150 people, understanding what was the environment was happening and adapting and perceiving what are the differences and how might I have thrived. So that idea I do recommend to understand that, yeah, it's you. You need to adapt. It's not them. So you need to figure out what's different.
Okay. So let's switch and talk about sort of the wealth gap of capital connection for Hispanic founders and investors. Personally, when I'm doing these business plan reviews or I'm doing these business plan competitions, and you know, we've seen a big focus on bringing in a more diverse founder base to be considered for capital, but I still don't see that many Hispanic founders coming in seeking capital. So is it because they, you know, we've had this sort of imposter syndrome, if you will, for a Black-owned business for a long time and women-owned businesses because they just expected a no, so they didn't even try. And now there's been a kind of an awareness in the last few years on both sides of the equation. So, but I'd found previously that, like in the Asian Indian marketplace, they kind of dealt with their own. Indian investors invested in Indian businesses and likewise. So what do you see within the Hispanic marketplace of founders and investors? Are they just integrated and they're just in there? Are they self-sufficient in the way that they connect? Or what kind of trends do you see happening in the capital space and the innovation entrepreneur space?
Well, you're more versed than I am in terms of that. What I do see in terms of investing and what's happening, it's a lot more interest. Yes, there's country risks all over, and you have to figure out that the risk that you're taking. But I see things mushrooming. I mean, opportunities mushrooming in Chile, in Colombia, and in Argentina, and even what's happening in Uruguay in terms of wealth management is amazing. So I do think that that's easier to highlight where the unicorns are and what are the things that can be generated. And there's much more interest. I do think that there's the Y Combinators of this world and the accelerators of this world are taking into account more and more Latin America. Have they been part of the move in the US? Not that much. So you see like Mercado Libre, you would see Rappi, you would see like the typical the unicorns that have been out there, but there are many, many coming out. So they're and not only in terms of startups, but also in terms of companies that are branching out. So we see companies, legacy companies, building laboratories across Latin America, legacy companies bringing in their fast-moving consumer goods into the US or into Europe. So there's this global aspect of investing is real. And as any investor, as soon as they see return on investment, they see the opportunity, I think it's coming out. Have we kept very quiet in Latin America? Have we kept quiet in terms of, I think it's not the imposter syndrome. It's more like, am I able to compete with this big players and this huge markets? And it comes to a point where that we're competing in terms of payment systems, cashless, even deliveries. And the things that have been highlighted, things are coming into the first world. Not only the US and Europe.
Okay, great. So in the few minutes that we have left, anything else you'd like to add that maybe you didn't get a chance to say or answer?
Yeah, well, make sure that you have, again, what's not communicated is not known. So for us, getting to the right message is important. We can help you sift through that messaging and sift through what it is that is right. But go with a strategy, go with your story and go with your experience so that it works and generates that virtuous cycle as opposed to, value chain. For me, it's a value cycle. You need to continue generating, spinning that cycle or that value cycle so that it generates value. Take care. And in terms of Hispanic, there's great opportunities. There's great opportunities going from Latin America to Europe, to Latin America, to the US. US for Latin America is also on top market. And for in terms of getting information out there, we're super excited if we can help one company or one minority going forward. So we help a lot of companies elevate. We help women. We help, and like we said before, in terms of giving back and doing good. We do pro bono projects a year so that we can give back. So whatever we know how to do best, we help foundations do so, like a hospital in Venezuela or Miami Symphony Orchestra in the US. So we do help that and build that into your messaging, build that into your, because it feels good. Not only feels good, but you're doing good in terms of the community you work for.
Great, great, great message to end on. So again, I want to encourage everybody to go to scalto.com so you can see how the scale experts, they have a great little chart there that talks about the key elements of how they work with their clients. And you can see lots of case studies there of projects that they've worked on. So I encourage you to go do that. And I thank you again, Gabriella, for being a guest on the Compassionate Capitalist Show. It's been great.
Thank you so much and looking forward.
Yes. And I want to encourage everybody again, obviously go to KarenRands.co or CougarRand.com to learn how we work with entrepreneurs that are in the mode of seeking capital, growth capital, and investors that need to help in sorting through which of these deals would be the best deal for me with the most likelihood to succeed. That's one of our core, what do they call it? superpowers. So with that, I want to say onwards and upwards, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please share this podcast with those that you believe can benefit from it, because that's how we grow our audience of compassionate capitalists. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast, The Compassionate Capitalist Show, brought to you by Cougaran Capital Holdings with Karen Rands as host. You are encouraged to visit the website cougaran.com to learn more about how Karen and her team help investors and angel groups make money by avoiding investing in deals
that have a undetected hidden flaw that will cause the company to either fail or just not scale.
And how the Cougaran Capital Companies and Partners help entrepreneurs break through their barriers to capital and live their dream by building companies that can scale and create generational wealth for their founders and investors. If your business could benefit from exposure to our audience of business executives, entrepreneurs, and investors, we are seeking financial partners and sponsors for the Compassionate Capitalist Show to help us take this podcast beyond our 150,000 listeners and amplify the message of the Compassionate Capitalist Movement by making this a top 50 business podcast. The Compassionate Capitalist Show is available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Pandora, and Google Podcasts. Contact us at KarenRands.co to learn more. And as a listener, you can do your part of the Compassionate Capitalist Movement by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts and sharing this show with your friends and colleagues. Be sure to pick up your copy of Karen's bestseller that launched the Compassionate Capitalist Movement, Inside Secrets to Angel Investing, a step-by-step strategies to leverage private equity investment for passive wealth creation. Thank you for listening.